20 Minutes on Filler Podcast. I am your host, Jason Katarski, and you are listening to episode 47 with special guest, Matt Wolf. Hey, Matt, how's it going?
It's going awesome, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Dude, I am stoked to have you on. I love getting to talk to my friends about games and stuff. So
definitely the stuff.
The stuff is the best part.
Yes.
So here's my introduction to Matt Wolf. It was 2 years ago at Unpub 4 in Dover, Delaware.
And beautiful scenic Dover, Delaware.
Oh, yeah, so much. So beauty. So beauteous. Well, I don't even know what words I'm using right now because I'm so struck with this encounter that I can't even articulate how cool it was. So we're just standing around, and we have some mutual friends. We're at this designer dinner the night before the festivities kind of kick off at Unpub. For those of you who don't know, Unpub is an unpublished games festival where designers get together with playtesters to test new games. Publishers come. It's this kind of wonderful creative environment. And Matt is just really good at conversation and small talk, and he introduced himself, and we were standing around eating pizza and just chatting about where we were from and game design. And you know, when you meet somebody who's easy to talk to, it makes it easier to talk to them again in the future. So, and we've been friends since then. So we've been friends for a couple of years, and at that Unpub, I played his game Wealth, which was an interesting game. And then that was the year that you signed your first game, right?
That's right, yeah. It was, at the time, it was called the Wombat Game, and then it turned into Wombat Rescue, which is a much better name. And yeah, that was Unpub 4. Yeah, Wealth, the best thing you can say about Wealth is that it was interesting. Yeah.
No, yeah. You know what? Andy Lennox and I, we played that. We both played it together, I think.
You did, yeah.
Yeah, and we both walked away saying, this is really cool. I just wish we could cut it in half. That was the only thing. But
yeah, there's some other issues. I did a lot more testing on that, and it turned out there was a fundamental flaw that I have yet to figure out how to resolve that. So that's on the extreme back burner.
Awesome. Yeah, so this is what game design sounds like, you guys. Yeah. People get together, we play each other's games, we talk about what works, what doesn't work, and good things sometimes come of it, and other times things get put away on the shelf for a very long time.
Yeah, and part of your heart breaks, and then you move on.
That's right. And it's like pulling out your high school yearbook every once in a while, like looking at all the kids you used to know, and you're like, oh, I'm so much nostalgia when you're looking at your old shelved prototypes. And sometimes you're like, I need to call that person, and you just really connect again, and something good comes of it. But
and then you find out, wow, that person's no, that's not what I remember at all. Yeah, that's not so good.
So why don't you tell us a little more about yourself? So you're a game designer. Like, what else do you do, like, for a real job? Because as most of you maybe know this by now who are listening, it's very hard to make game design a real job, but it's real work, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely real work, yeah. So in my day job, I'm actually a tech writer. So I do help systems and various kind of technical writing in the medical industry. And you'd think that would make me really good at writing rule books, but no, not at all. It's actually, it's just so hard to write your own rule book. I'm really, really good at editing other people's rule books and making them more clear because I'm not so close, you know, to the source material, but my own stuff, it's still really difficult. But yes, and I live in North Carolina with my wife Marcy, and we play a lot of games ourselves, and she helps me out a lot with playtesting, and that's kind of the most interesting thing about me is trying to do this game design thing.
That's really cool, and you mentioned North Carolina, and that's kind of where the mutual friends come in. Chris Kirkman from Dice Hate Me Games is from North Carolina, and Dan Patrice, and kind of Daniel Solis. Like, some of these people that I was connected to were also connected to Matt, and you find out that this is like there's a booming design community of game designers in that Raleigh-Durham area.
Yeah, it's one reason is because in the Triangle area, the Triangle is Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill.
Oh, right.
There's a lot of tech. There's a lot of higher education. And so there's a lot of people in the area who are just kind of into more intellectual pursuits. And so such as, you know, strategic board games and things like that. And so with so much brain power in the area. There's many people that want to play and just are interested in kind of getting into design, and or not even necessarily design, but they just like playing games. So they're part of the industry in that manner. And we actually have a group in the area called the Game Designers of North Carolina. And we've got something like 60 people that are in the group at this point, at least on in the guild on Board Game Geek.
Wow. 60 or 16?
60, 6-0.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so we have like, you know, Unpub Minis once a year where we get a couple hundred people that come through all together, you know, just in terms of foot traffic. And yeah, there it's a really big scene in North Carolina. And that was surprising to me when I started doing this about 3 or 4 years ago. And once you start kind of exploring, you know, who is interested, it just opens up. You're like, wow, this is amazing, and of all the interest that's going on in this area.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I have to get down there at some point to just to see what it's all about.
Absolutely, yeah. We've got a lot of good game stores, and there's a local convention. There's actually two local conventions. One is in February, and one is in actually it's going to be in September. I'm going to go to it a week from when we're recording this. And yeah, it's just a really nice place to be if you're into the hobby.
That's awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned conventions, and last time we got to hang out face to face was at Gen Con, and that's the big one here in the United States. And we talked about it a little bit last episode, so if you want to hear more about Gen Con, you can check that episode out too, where Andy and I, my regular co-host, kind of talk about some of the games. I was getting ready to talk to Matt, and I realized I forgot to talk about my favorite game of the whole conventions, and people have probably heard about it by now, and I know Matt played it. I think we might have played it together once or twice.
I'm sure at least once or twice.
Because this game was it's Codenames, and this game is by I don't even know how to say his name very well. Vlada Chvadal. Did I do that right?
Yeah, I think that's almost exactly right.
Cool. Yeah, and this game is the kind of game that like takes 20 minutes, and it was so brilliant that like we sat there and played it for 2.5 hours with people rotating in and out, people changing seats, changing teams. It's a wonderful game. So did you play it like all throughout the weekend?
On and off. It would just kind of depend on what else people wanted to play. I mean, I think I probably played it probably about a dozen times at Gen Con alone. And since Gen Con, and we're out, like a month or like 5 weeks, I've played it probably another 20 times, and it's quickly become the most played game in my collection outside of anything that I've designed. It's in 5 weeks. That's how wow. Brilliant this game is.
That's cool. My most played game ever. I just got a new version of it. It's called Lupin Chewy. I played Lupin Louie like 150 times, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, one game of Lupin Louie, can you actually like count that as a full play?
Totally, I do. I count every single time. I'm like, all right, I played that 17 times just now. So,
and it took 17 minutes to play 17 times. Now, yeah, Lupin Chewy is really fun. I got that too. Awesome. And I have Lupin Louie as well. And I actually, I don't know. Have you played Lupin Chewy enough to compare the two yet?
Yeah. So we'll come back to Codenames in a minute, but yeah. So Lupin Louie, right? There's in Lupin Louie, if you guys don't know, it is a game with this motor in the middle and a crazy airplane pilot that flies around a circle on this kind of arm, and the arm is on a hinge, so it goes up and down, and you have a little a barn that sticks, that's connected to the central motor, and everybody sits on their own side, and there's a little like flipper, like pinball kind of deal. And as the airplane comes, you want to hit your flipper so you can make that pilot bounce over your barn, because your barn is protecting your chickens, right? You have these three discs that it sounds so ridiculous.
Totally.
So your airplane, if it hits your chicken, it rolls off your barn, and when you're out of barns, you're out of the game. Or out of chickens, you're out of the game. So that's for four players. Lupin Chewy only has three players. It's a little different setup, and I'm sure that there was a trade-off there, right? Like, hey, we're going to do one less player so we can afford the Star Wars license for this game.
I was wondering if Hasbro, I don't know, with their data analysis, if they thought that most families now in America are three instead of four, and if that was the reason why. I wasn't sure if it was, you know, a money issue in terms of like the plastics, or if it was just they just thought that three was going to match, you know, the current America better or something. Yeah, that is the big difference, is the three. And then, of course, instead of having the biplane with the mustachioed evil evil dude. You have Chewie on the Millennium Falcon trying to go around and knock stormtroopers down.
Right.
And yeah, and it felt like so far, I actually prefer Lupin Louie. It just feels like he, I don't know, because it's the shape of the biplane, like it feels like it's slightly less predictable. And like Lupin Chewie, it feels like it's a little bit more predictable what Chewie is going to do. And I don't know, it still needed more play, but so, and it's still fun. It's just a silly, fun game. But so far, I'm actually preferring Lupin Louie.
Yeah, you know, now that you say that, like, I did hit the Millennium Falcon every time I wanted to hit the Millennium Falcon. You know, like, yeah. And sometimes, like, you hit the airplane right on, and maybe it's because my game is worn out, and, like, there's not as much, like, bounce in my flippers, but but it doesn't do what I want it to, and I end up taking out my own chickens.
Right. Yeah, you're like, I can't believe I just spun that plane into my own chickens. That's ridiculous.
I am amazing.
Yeah.
You know, another thing about that is maybe when one player is eliminated in the three-player game, it makes it a little easier. Like, if two people get eliminated and they're sitting next to each other, one person has an advantage in the game.
Yeah.
So maybe that takes that down a notch, too, because you actually can have a little more control. You're not trying to, like, spin the plane all the way around the board. You just have to skip over one spot to get a good shot. But
right, yeah. It's actually really difficult to hit the person that's, like, in front of you. In Lupin Chewie, it's still possible, but you really have to be skilled to do that.
Yeah, so this game it's wonderful. It's in stores right now. It's like $25. You can get it at like Target and Walmart and Meijer and Toys R Us. And Lupin Louie will probably be gone for a while now that they just launched this. Because Lupin Louie is this game that comes in and out of print. Like they bring it out around Christmas every couple of years, and it sells like hotcakes for a while. They were selling for like $200 a copy. I found my first copy for $1 at Goodwill, and it was brand new in the box with no stickers on it. And it was like, it was the larger version too, like the original one. So, so I got a pretty major score on that one, but, so that's been hitting the table a lot for me, and it's super fun. And I recommend it cause I got Star Wars on the brain right now.
Everyone does.
Codenames, back to Codenames. So Codenames is a party game, right? It's like a $20 price point, so everybody needs it. Like, you can play this game with anybody. It's the cool thing is, like, when you play apples to apples, whatever. Like, you don't have to be smart to play apples to apples.
You could have no brain function at all. This is what Jason's saying. You know, you could be flatline, and you actually could still play apples to apples. That's what's happening.
That sounded pretty jerky, but so like a lot of party games, they're not great, right? But this one is almost like it really toes that line between like a gamery game and a party game. So the way the game works is that there's two teams and there's two captains. There's one captain of each team, and they are trying to. There's a grid of cards that are like, are they 6x6 or something like that?
Five by five
grid of cards. And the goal is there's hidden agents amongst these cards. And all the cards just have words on them. And the hidden agents are among them. And the way they're identified is by a certain card that kind of shows you a 5x5 layout. And it shows you two different colors, blue and red. And there's an assassin. There's one of these that are X'd out. And some are neutral. And what you're trying to do on your team is to get your team to identify all the secret agents of your color. Did I do that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Cool. Without being the first to do it.
Being the first to do it and avoiding that assassin. The minute that your team chooses the assassin, you're done.
Yep.
But the way you do this is you can give clues as a captain. And the clues are a number and a word. And you're trying to look at the cards of your color that have been identified on your little secret card. And you're trying to find a way to categorize a number of those cards. So you might say three things have to do with royalty, and then your team has to go and say, I think he means this one and this one and this one, and then you guess, and the if you get them right, you get a bonus kind of freebie guess later on.
Yeah, if you whatever the number is for the number of clues, if you correctly guess that number, then you can choose, your team can choose to get a bonus guess, which can help later in the game if you missed a clue earlier. If you don't get the total number, so in that case, in that example, royalty 3, if you only get 2, then you don't get that bonus guess. And you can also choose to stop before you take 3 guesses if you're not feeling too confident. You don't want to guess the other team's color or one of the neutral pedestrians or even the assassin word.
Yes, totally. And the cool thing about this game is that as smart as you are, like you might give that clue three royalty, and then as soon as you say it, you find there's five words that could be associated with that clue. So it's this. Sometimes the best thing you can do is find one clue and say one and give a very clear thing, but then then they have the other team has a chance if they get lucky to move ahead. It's just such it's a thinky game, and it's a different feel whether you're the captain or whether you're a teammate that's trying to guess. And it's this, like, if you like that kind of being in charge, kind of puzzling things out, then, well, either side is good for the puzzling things out, but to be the guy in the hot seat, the person that is giving the clues, like, that was a very stressful experience for me, especially when I was playing with a bunch of super smart game designers. Like, the pressure was on.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a little bit of a pressure situation. It doesn't have to be. But yeah, definitely, you know, have you played Mysterium yet?
I have not.
Right, so for people who have played Mysterium, it has, to me, a similar feel of Mysterium, but it's more approachable, and it doesn't feel quite as much pressure as you feel in Mysterium when you're playing the ghost and you're trying to give people these vague illustrated cards that have no words and trying to get them to guess the right thing. And they can interpret that in really crazy ways. In Codenames, you can still have people do some crazy interpretations, but usually it's a little bit more reined in. You don't feel quite as much pressure as when you're the ghost in Mysterium. And I have to admit, I almost overlooked this game because I thought it was a word game. I mean, because I saw all the cards had words on them, and you're trying to guess the words that, you know, your team has. You know, on the first day of Gen Con, Adam O'Brien and I were walking around. He had pre-ordered it, and so we were trying to find the CGE booth. And when we got there, they had two copies left that weren't already pre-ordered. And I figured, well, if Adam O'Brien is getting a copy, and Adam is a, you know, deep strategic, you know, Euro gamer, then okay, I'm gonna get one too for $20. I'll take a chance, and I'm really glad I did, because it's not a word game. It has words in it, but it's a deduction game, and it's a team, you know, deduction game. So if you're like me, you don't really like word games, which is surprising since I'm actually a writer in real life. Yeah, it's don't worry about that. It's not a word game. It just happens to have words in it. Yeah, really, just such a clever design. Totally jealous that Vlada is able to do games like this.
Absolutely. I mean, that game to me, like, I don't know, I'm gonna call an early prediction that this is gonna be nominated for all kinds of awards this year. Just because it's this wonderful level of gameplay that can appeal to a wide audience, and it's so simple and so new. You know, it just feels like fresh and awesome. But anyway, so Codenames, I haven't got a copy yet because they were all sold out and I wasn't smart enough to pre-order it, but I'm gonna get one soon. I ordered it at my friendly local game store, so when you see it, grab it, buy it for people for Christmas presents. It's that good. Like, everybody's gonna love this game. So quickly, another cool thing which we didn't mention yet is Matt and I have a special relationship. In that,
oh, you're gonna tell people about this?
Yeah, we're just gonna announce it right here on air. we have a game together. We have a game together that we are that I'm publishing through Green Couch Games, and it's called Avalanche at Yeti Mountain. It's on Kickstarter right now. So I wanted to talk to Matt a little bit about that game before we kind of round out the episode with a few kind of lightning round type questions. So Matt, why don't you just give us a quick overview of your game? Just what is it? How does it play?
Well, this is very surprising. This game is complete news to me. I had no idea this was actually going on. Now, so Avalanche at Yeti Mountain.
I threw your name on it.
I'll see you in court, sir. So yeah, Avalanche at Yeti Mountain is a game where you're playing a super smart engineering student who is, like, really book smart but street stupid. And you and your friends have invented rocket-powered skis, and you're like, yes, this is awesome. We are the best engineering students around. Let's go test these. And your friends say, yes, that's a great idea. We're going to go test these skis. And so you go to the nearest mountain, which is called Yeti Mountain. And because that you are not very street smart, you don't realize that the reason it's called Yeti Mountain is because a Yeti actually lives on Yeti Mountain. This is why no one wants to go up there. And so you're at the top of the mountain. You're testing your rocket-powered skis. And now you have a very angry Yeti who is chasing you down the mountain. And in addition to that, you, in your brilliance, did not realize that the rocket powered skis are also going to cause avalanches. So in this game, it's a racing game. It goes for 2 to 5 players. You are going to set up some cards in the middle of the table that act as the mountain, and you're going to play cards simultaneously with your other players, trying to move down the mountain fast enough, sometimes doing some rocket jumps, which will initiate very long movements on the mountain, but will increase the speed of the avalanche. You're trying to race down the mountain, beat your fellow players down the mountain, evade the Yeti, who will damage your rocket power skis, and not get caught by the avalanche, which would bury you in snow. And of course, then you would have to be rescued by the ski patrol later on. Really fun little filler game, and I like that how Jason puts it. Go ahead. What's your tagline for Green Couch Games, Jason?
Oh, it's great little games that make great big connections.
Yes, and I think that avalanche just fits in really nicely with the line, and it's just a nice silly card game where you can have a lot of fun and trying to race in the most preposterous possible situation.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I first played this last year, so this was like at Unpub 5, or the beginning of this year actually, which was like the 1 year anniversary of Matt's and I's relationship.
That's right.
And
you didn't bring me flowers, though.
I didn't bring you anything. but like we played this game, and it had all those elements that, I mean, like, it was a little game, and it did make some cool connections, because it's this, on one level, it's this game where you're playing a card and moving your skiers. But on another level, you can kind of have this social play that's intertwined with it, that people kind of pick up on the more they play the game, trying to work together to make somebody crash, or trying to work in a way that they are in the back so they get to control the Yeti. I think that there's a lot of really fun things that are packed into this small amount of components in this small box. So it resonated with me as soon as I first played it with you. And I'm really excited about people kind of catching on to the idea. And we had Adam McIver, who also was the artist for Best Treehouse Ever and a million other games, do art for us. And it really turned out beautifully. So,
yeah, Adam's illustrations are just amazing. That guy, he can do everything. And I'm so jealous, because it just, he does game design, he does illustration, he does graphic design. He's probably, I don't know, he probably knows how to yodel or something. And he just... He just does everything. Yeah, he's awesome. And I can't wait until there's some surprises that are coming in the project. And I can't wait for those to get revealed, so we can see even more of Adam's amazing illustrations.
Yeah, he's a great guy, too. He's like, he's all that talent and just a nice human being. So that's a huge bonus. So this game right now, it's on Kickstarter. We're 2/3 of the way to funded at about $10,000, and we are looking to raise $15,000. We just announced our first stretch goal, which will be at $16,000, some special invention cards that add a little more interactivity and surprises to the game. And we would love for you to go to the Kickstarter page and check it out. You can get a copy for $16 plus shipping. So we're pretty serious about this, like, small games and good price points. But the challenge that we have is that it takes a whole lot of backers to get to these funding goals when you're only charging $16 a piece.
Right.
So we appreciate if you would take a look and see if the game's for you. There's lots of reviews, gameplay videos. There's the solo variant for the game. There's some extra advanced variant gameplay, so it's one of those games that is very replayable, and I think it creates a really fun experience. So that's the end of the commercial portion of the episode. But
this episode of 20 Minutes of Filler brought to you by Green Couch Games.
Every single time. I do what I want. No, I appreciate you guys for listening, seriously, and checking out our company, because it just... I think the two things, 20 Minutes of Filler and the games we want to do, just are such a compliment to one another. So I'm trying to raise the awareness for these great little games. So one of the things that I really like about Matt, and I want to know, like, kind of about what kind of games, like, Matt's into a variety of games. He's into these big, heavy Euro-style games, and he's into a lot of quirky, small card games. He likes a little bit of everything, and he's introduced me to a lot of cool games that he has imported from other countries, and just he goes on a limb to bring neat games, unique games over here.
I like to do discover, you know, the weird stuff that's out there and give it a try. And if you can't tell from the theme of Avalanche at Yeti Mountain, you know, I like some stuff that's not just normal. You know, it's not, hey, I'm an architect. Great. You
know, yeah, or, that's awesome.
Nothing against architects, you know, but yeah, it's just, come on. There's a million games out there that do. Definitely. Yeah, I'm going to go build something.
Yeah, that fits into my tastes too, like kind of the unique stuff, and I love that discovery aspect as well. Can you think of any games that specifically influenced your design of Avalanche?
No, nothing specific. When I design a game, I usually don't start from like the white space of another game, or kind of start in the knowing where my inspiration comes from. It just, I don't know, stuff rattles around in the subconscious of my brain and somehow spits out an idea, and I take it, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, usually it doesn't. I can't trace any specific influence to this game.
That's cool. Yeah. For me, it's sometimes that story that, and in this game, I feel like that's the place where it came from, right? Like you had a ski idea and you built around that.
the original idea for this was a game called Escape from the Fog That Turns You Inside Out. which was a tile laying game where you and your friends were camping and you see this fog rolling in really fast, and then you would see like an animal run out from the fog, and the animal was turned inside out, and you and your friends are like, oh no, this is really, really bad, we gotta run. And so it was supposed to be a tile laying game, sort of like Sorrow, using those types of tiles where you build paths, and he had to run from the fog, and the fog was going to advance, you know, at the end of each round and things like that. And this is what I was working on for Unpub 5, and it completely failed. And a week before, I was in a panic, and I had to figure out what in the world I was going to do. And that's how I kind of stumbled into what eventually became Avalanche at Yeti Mountain, and really scaled it down to just have a deck of cards and the theme change and to I think that working in a panic state can definitely help in yeah. game design sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. That's cool. That's neat.
Yeah. So
that's
if you think Avalanche at Yeti Mountain is a weird theme, just imagine if it would have been Escape from the Fog That Turns You Inside Out.
I love that game weird. Already. I think you should resurrect that title and get to work.
I do have it on the back burner. I got some ideas on how to fix all the issues from the previous one.
Awesome. Well, so are you ready for the lightning round?
Let's do it.
I'm going to put you on the spot with some random questions I'm going to make up right now, okay?
Okay.
So what is your favorite game that you imported from another country that's not available in the United States?
Oh, wow. That is a tough one. I'm going to say Glenmore, simply because it's no longer in print in the U.S. It did have a U.S. release at one time.
I have a copy from that. It's a great game. Wow.
Yeah. I hope they reprint that at some point. Because it's just so good.
Awesome. Look these up on BGG. We don't have time to talk about all of them, but you're getting some great titles from the mind of Matt Wolf. So, okay, next one. What's your favorite game you've ever backed on Kickstarter?
Oh, man. I've backed like 300 projects. I don't know how I could possibly pick one.
What's one that just comes to mind when you think about Kickstarter game?
I would say probably Castle Dice. I really like Castle Dice. Have you played that one?
I have not.
Yeah, so it's not a filler, but you have a dice you roll each round that forms a pool, and then you're going to draft dice out of there to build various stuff. I just think it's very clean, clever, and it has some randomness, you know, with the dice rolling, and yeah, it's pretty good.
Awesome. Okay. Favorite game to introduce to people who have not played games in the hobby space?
Oh, that is – you're asking really tough questions here. Wow. I'm going to give two answers. One would be Love Letter if I think the people that are playing aren't may not be quite ready for something a little bit more. Like maybe, you know, someone's played like chess or something. Instead, I'm going to introduce them to Carcassonne. But if someone hasn't really played anything, like they haven't played Monopoly since they were 10 or something, then Love Letter.
Cool. Very good. Okay, so what is your favorite game from Gen Con? Codenames isn't available.
It would be Discoveries.
Ooh, that's like the dice version, not dice version, but a dice game that is in the same world as Lewis and Clark.
Right, yeah.
Yes. I played that with you, and it was so late, and it was a really good game, but it was really heavy for the how late it was.
Right, it was like 1 a.m., and Jason was just... what was the trail mix we had? It had like mocha coffee beans in there.
Yeah.
You got your second win once those started kicking in.
Oh yeah, dude. I am guys, just for the record, I am hilarious post 11 p.m. So
it's true.
What is the game that got you into hobby gaming?
Believe it or not, Flux.
Flux. Yeah. No, I believe that. That was an early game for me too. What's a game that replaced Flux in your collection?
All of them.
Is there something specifically, like, okay, so Flux, the ever-changing rules, a little bit of chaos, is there a game that you're like, I never need to play this again because, well, Flux isn't great, maybe, but because you have something else that fits that niche?
You know, I hadn't really thought about it in that manner, but Gloria to Rome, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Cool. What is the most recent game you purchased?
It would be the giant-sized Rhino Hero from Japan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It is massive. I can't believe how big it is.
You know. I saw it in the family area at, I think it was at Origins. And, yeah, it was big, and that's cool. Awesome. Matt, what else is there anything else coming out besides the Avalanche Kickstarter campaign or anywhere that people can kind of find out more about what you're up to?
Well, so if you want, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Matt Wolf with an E on the end of Wolf. I don't tweet a tremendous amount, but I will certainly interact with you if you interact with me, if you want to be Twitter pals. I'm also the same username on BoardGameGeek as well. If you want to check out the Game Design Group, if you just happen to be listening and you're in North Carolina, if you go to gdofnc.com, which stands for Game Designers of North Carolina, that's going to take you to our guild where you can find more information and, you know, come on out, and we'd be happy to introduce you or continue your journey in game design.
Awesome. And you can also hear Matt pretty regularly on the Geek All-Stars podcast with Dan Patrice and Chris Kirkman and others from a motley crew of gamers down there in North Carolina.
Motley is the right word.
Well, thanks a lot, dude, for coming on. I always love talking to you and hearing about people's experience with games. And thanks for giving us some new recommendations. And we will see you soon. Thank you guys for listening. We are the 20 Minutes of Filler podcast. You can find us in iTunes, and you can give us 5-star reviews. And you can find other great podcasts along with ours on the Dice Tower Network, which is dicetowernetwork.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jason Katarski.